Up next, more spacey news.
All right.
Can't get enough. Mm-mm. Earlier this week, NASA announced plans to launch another rover to Mars in the year 2020. And there's some buzz. There's some speculation that this one could have a wheel up on Curiosity. Maybe it wouldn't just analyze samples there, but could ship them back to Earth.
You know, I've heard that before.
Debbie Downer.
I'm not going to get very... We'll wait for that to happen. It was supposed to happen. But I'm going to look on the positive side, because the objectives of this new rover mission have not been decided yet. And, you know, the entire project is still going to depend on NASA's funding in Congress.
Okay,
we know what funding in Congress is like. So let's ask our audience, right?
Yeah.
Let's ask them. What do you think? What exciting things, if they're building the Curiosity twin now, they haven't launched it yet, what do you want to see on that baby? What do you want it to do, maybe, that the Curiosity is not doing? Or maybe we're too focused on Mars, you want to go someplace else? What do you think?
1-800-989-8255, 1-800-989-TALK. And let's introduce our guest who may actually be able to speak to this with authority. Jim Green is the director of NASA's Planetary Science Division, and he's joining us from a studio at NASA headquarters in D.C. Welcome to the show.
Well, thank you very much. It's a pleasure to participate in this great program.
What are the plans for this rover? So far, what do we know? What should we expect?
Will you tell us?
Okay.
Oh, I'll tell you anything I can about this rover, because we're really excited about the science rover that we have planned.
Do you have a name for it yet?
No, we don't, other than Mars 2020 Science Rover. That's pretty vanilla. but we have plenty of time to name it and move along. But this rover will have a major science objective. You know, we've been over the years developing a program where we looked at Mars to find water, you know, sort of follow the water. It's one of those essential ingredients about life. And now we know just about everywhere we look, there are signs of past water. And in fact, we've even, we believe, observed water emanating from aquifers, down crater walls. That's been a really exciting discovery over this last year. So from that perspective, we're moving on. Following the water, the answer is we found it. And now we're going to move into an era of seeking signs of life. You know, beyond Earth, we want to know if there are modern habitats elsewhere in the solar system where there are necessary conditions for life. That means organic matter, water, energy, nutrients, those things that allow life to develop and be sustained. And Mars actually is that gem of a planet that's close by that enable us actually to interrogate, to find the answer to that question.
And how will you find the answer to that? Are you going to bring any of it back? Send it back like that defunct Mars return mission that never happened? Or are you going to analyze
indeed.
It in greater depth? Or what are you going to do?
Okay. We're going to take a chapter out of what we've learned from the Apollo missions, and that is indeed be able to identify and grab samples and bring those back. In fact, we're still analyzing lunar samples. We recognize that samples back from places like the Moon and, of course, Mars provide us a scientific a treasure trove of information that will only improve as our instrumentation and our ability to interrogate it improves over time.
Do you have a budget? So, do you have a budget set for this yet? Is there any money?
Yes, we do. In fact, what we announced this week at the American Geophysical Union is what we would call an in-guideline from the president's budget submission that he gave Congress in February of this year, a rover in 2020. Now, the ability to get it at a cost that we can afford is really predicated on tremendous effort that's gone on with the successful landing of Curiosity, mm-hmm. You know, being able to get 1 ton down on the surface in such an unbelievable and fantastic way. We're going to be able to reproduce most of that infrastructure, changing out the experiments to where we really go after the life issue, determine if life ever arose on Mars, go after more of the potential organics that are there, and to be able to cache samples, potentially return those in the future, but certainly interrogate mm-hmm. those, create those from coring into rocks or drilling under the soil, and get to a point where we're actually looking in the past of Mars to determine how that environment has really changed over time.
Well, Jim Green, I want to thank you for taking time to be with us today. One more question for you
from
Flora.
Stay on, because we want you to talk with our next guest, too. So we've been talking about Mars, but there's also this really exciting news from Mercury this week. Last week in the journal Science, scientists reported that NASA's Messenger spacecraft found evidence of water ice on Mercury. Remember, Mercury is a scorcher, right? It's daytime temperatures, 800 degrees. It's the closest planet to the sun. And yet, it also harbors billions of tons of frozen water, these studies say. And our next guest is here to talk about this discovery. Matthew Siegler is a scientist at NASA's Jet Propulsion Laboratory in Pasadena, California. And he's the co-author on one of three papers about Mercury that appeared in the journal Science. Welcome to the show.
Hi, how you doing? I'm actually at the AGU conference that he was talking about earlier. We've heard all sorts of neat, exciting stuff about planets this week.
Now, how is it possible that there can be so much water on this giant, hot planet?
Oh, well, it's hot when it's under the sun. It's pretty cold when it's out of the sun. And because Mercury has essentially no tilt, places near the poles can stay in permanent shadow and be hundreds of degrees below zero. So we're measuring things down to about 50 Kelvin. We're modeling things down to about 50 Kelvin. We don't actually measure any temperatures.
And there's a lot of water. Was I reading something about if you put it on the island of Manhattan, it would be 10, I don't know, how many miles deep and spread out?
Yeah. The one I liked was if you covered the Washington, D.C. area, it would be about 2 miles thick, probably, of ice. So it's pretty impressive.
Can we speed that up a little bit, covering that D.C. area?
Well, what about, we've been talking about follow the water, but here seems like there's a lot of water. Why aren't we following this? What's the case for Mars, Jim Green, over Mercury?
Well, indeed, Mercury is tough to get to. It took us about 6 years to get Messenger launched and line it up and get it in orbit so that it could do the fantastic measurements that it's made. Whereas Mars is much more accessible. We line up every 26 months, so our trajectory can get to Mars quite easily in about a nine-month period.
This is Science Friday from NPR. Talking with Jim Green and Matthew Siegler. Matthew, could there be a sweet spot in that shadow that gets really close to the sun? But
this is what everyone's asking about. So basically, you got to think about what would happen to a water molecule in a body with no air. All right. So here it is. Maybe this ice we're measuring, we can only see in the top meter or so. Maybe it goes down 10 meters. We're really not sure yet. That would take future measurements. But if you're that close to the surface, if you get even a little bit warmer than about something like 100 Kelvin, so that's really cold, right? You're going to sublimate off into space in less than Earth day. So these are pretty short timescales to survive around.
Mm-hmm. So no hope of finding any liquid water there.
But there was organic matter there too, right?
Yeah, so that's actually the really exciting thing from this. So the ice, we've sort of known and been there since about 1992, when we did radar measurements from Arecibo on Earth, there has been this evidence that there was this bright reflective material down there. So the question was it really water ice? And the Messenger mission has been able to prove that. But it also had this laser altimeter that did a surprise finding. So it's just meant to measure topography. But it saw when it shot a laser down at some of these areas where we predict that thermally there should be ice stable at the surface. It's all bright stuff. But what was really neat was where ice should be under the surface, we saw black stuff. And when we look at the temperatures that this should be stable under, there are a bunch of organic materials that we see on the surfaces of comets all over the solar system that fit this description perfectly, and not many other materials that do. So it's pretty cool.
So it could have been bombarded by comets and brought the water and the dark stuff there?
Yeah, and that's sort of neat to look at the origin of the water on Mercury. And we're predicting that it's most likely from comets because we see other material with it. And then that tells us a lot about how water came to the Earth, right? We think that the whole inner solar system should have been dry when the solar system formed out of a big cloud of gas and dust, right? Mm-hmm. And so somehow the Earth has water, Mercury has water, the Moon seems to have a little water. Where did this come from? And we're thinking in this paper series that comets might be the good source of that.
Is there any chance you could home grow water? I mean, does it have to be shipped in? Could you make it on the planet?
Could it outgas from the center of the planet somewhere? Or
yeah.
Volcanoes or something?
The Earth, right, has more water inside of it than it does on the surface. So, yeah, that could be a source. And so maybe could tell us something about the internal structure of Mercury and that it has water vapor in there. But the fact that we see this other stuff with the water is strong evidence that this is water coming from somewhere else. But you really have to land there and sample it and maybe bring it back, like Jim was talking about with Mars, to really answer some of these questions.
I see you writing the proposal as we speak.
If I don't, someone will, right?
All right. Thank you, gentlemen, both. Again, good luck, because we're going to wait for that mission, the return mission to Mars with the new post-Curiosity. Maybe we can name it on Science Friday. What do you think? Let us help you out, Jim, do that?
You've got to have me back, and we'll discuss more of that, and maybe we can do something.
All right.
I look forward to it.
And good luck to you, Matthew, in getting that mission to Mercury, too.
All right. Well, thanks for your
go down and sample that.
Forgotten planet.
not anymore. You made the head of the news this week, so I think Mercury is in the news.
All right, good. That keeps it from being knocked off like Pluto, right?
Well, any time the scientific word dark stuff is used, we know it's serious science.
All right, well, good.
Thanks a lot. Have a good weekend.
Thank you.
You too. Bye.
Greg Smith composed our theme music. We had help today from NPR librarian Kim Molesky. If you have missed any part of our program, you'd like to hear it again, you want to hear about Mercury and all that dark stuff in the water on it, go to our audio, video, iTunes. We also have our pick of the week up there.
Check out the pick of the week. It's the blue whale barrel roll, ride on the back of a blue whale.
It's up there.
Like you never have before.
Yeah, it's up there on our website at sciencefriday.com. And while you're there, get on our mailing list because we send you all kinds of extra goodies during the week. And we're also tweeting all week at SciFry. And go on and like our Facebook at sci/SciFry. And we'll be talking all week. I'm Ira Flato with Flora Luckman. Have a great weekend. See you next week.